Param tapa, param tapa, O chastiser of the enemy,
O chastiser of the enemy,
sarvam,
sarvam,
all, karma,
karma,
activity, akhilam,
akhilam,
in totality,
partha,
partha, O son of pritha,
O son of pritha,
jnane,
jnane,
in knowledge, parisamaptyate,
parisamaptyate,
end. Translation. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. Purport. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge. Then to get relief from material miseries and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches a stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For, without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. Depending on differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruitive activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. Kindly repeat the translation. O chastiser of the enemy,
O chastiser of the enemy,
the sacrifice performed,
the sacrifice performed
in knowledge is better than, the mere sacrifice, of material possession.
After all,
O son of Pritha,
O son of Pritha,
all sacrifices of work,
culminate in
transcendental knowledge.
Om
Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovrishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Vatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaurastashe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are presently discussing the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called Transcendental Knowledge. And in this section of the fourth chapter, Lord Krishna has been talking about different types of sacrifices, and ultimately he concludes that the purpose of all sacrifices is to attain transcendental knowledge, and therefore that sacrifice which is performed with transcendental knowledge is superior to a mere sacrifice of material possessions without such transcendental knowledge. When work combines with transcendental knowledge, then it becomes the topmost sacrifice. And that is Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness is the highest knowledge. Raj Vidya, Raj Kuhyam, Pavitramidam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dhanyam, Susukham Kartum, Abhyayam. Knowledge must produce happiness. There are different kinds of knowledge. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance is actually ignorance only. Knowledge in the mode of passion brings about some material enjoyment, eventually brings distress. Knowledge in the mode of goodness, it brings peace, it brings material happiness. Not necessarily material sense pleasure, but it brings some kind of peace. Whereas transcendental knowledge brings something higher, that is beyond the three modes. And even on the transcendental platform, there are gradations. Knowledge of the impersonal brings about a certain higher degree of peace, which is called Brahmananda, the ananda or happiness of merging into the impersonal Brahman. But the highest of them all is knowledge of Krishna consciousness, because it can give us the highest bliss. So one of the qualities of knowledge is that it should bring happiness. If knowledge doesn't bring happiness, then it is not real knowledge. That is how we distinguish vidya from avidya. Vidya means knowledge, avidya means ignorance. Whatever is being taught in the material world is basically avidya in the guise of vidya. It is ignorance being portrayed as knowledge. Of course, there is no harm in understanding something about this world in which we live, and to some extent it is necessary to understand this world in which we live. Nevertheless, to try to obtain knowledge of this world separate from its origin, Krishna, is ignorance. After all, what is Maya? Maya means to see anything disconnected from its source. And the ultimate source is Krishna. So if we see anything independent of Krishna, that is Maya. There is one conversation which Srila Prabhupada had with one professor in one of the universities in America. And Srila Prabhupada was trying to explain how there may be different departments of knowledge in any university. But which department is there which talks about the science of the soul? We should first try to understand who I am before we can understand other things. Even before we understand what the world is, we should understand who I am. And then the professor asked him, well, what's wrong with understanding the world, and why is it so necessary to understand oneself? And the discussion goes on like this. And ultimately, the professor says that, well, you know, when we study how the grass grows, we derive knowledge, we derive understanding. It gives us so much pleasure. So here again the point, even the materialists understand this point, that knowledge brings pleasure. It brings a higher grade of happiness. So Prabhupada said, our quarrel with you is not that you are studying this grass, but our point is, that you give more importance to studying the grass than the creator of the grass. It's a beautiful point, isn't it? Prabhupada said, this grass over here which you want to study, it has been growing before you. Even as you are studying it, it's growing, and even after you it will continue to grow. The grass will grow whether you study it or not. So you have to study the origin, who is the creator of everything, the creator of this grass. So because your science is not connecting things to God, therefore it is defective. The perception of knowledge means to see everything in connection with its origin or the source, that is Krishna. In this way, perfect knowledge brings perfect happiness, which is Krishna consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explains that one of the characteristics of bhakti or pure devotional service to Krishna is that it has incalculably condensed bliss. Sandrananda Visheshatma. Bhakti is that whose essential characteristic is condensed bliss. There is so much happiness that it cannot be compared to anything else. Even the happiness that the jnanis seek by merging into the impersonal Brahman is like a drop of water compared to the unlimited ocean of devotional service. So knowledge of Brahman is one thing, but knowledge of Krishna is another thing. So knowledge of Krishna, that jnana, has to be distinguished from the path of jnana. Jnana and jnana yoga are two different things. Jnana means any knowledge. So we want knowledge of Krishna. The fourth chapter is about that. It's about knowledge about Krishna. We want to know the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance, his pastimes, activities, and so on. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatpata yatva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never, upon leaving this world, returns again, but he attains to my eternal abode. In other words, understanding Krishna in his completeness, that is, Krishna means his form, his names, his abodes, his devotees, his pastimes, his qualities, everything about Krishna. And because the material creation is also an energy of Krishna, when we say we must know Krishna, we also mean that we must know something about Krishna's creation. So we must know something about this material world also, but in connection to Krishna. Therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam talks so much about the creation as well. There are 10 topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and a couple of them are devoted to the creation. Atra sarga visargascha sthanam poshanam utayah, and so on. So sarga and visarga, the creation of Mahavishnu and then the subsequent creation of Brahma within every universe, that's also part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because ultimately Shukadeva Goswami is explaining how the Lord is facilitating the creation, how he is the unseen force behind everything. So this is the kind of knowledge that ultimately we must have. But even that knowledge is not enough, even if it is knowledge of Krishna. After all, Krishna doesn't say that one must only have academic knowledge. Tatvataha, he says. Tatvataha means in truth. That means this knowledge must be realized. There must be faith. There must be love. There are many academic scholars who know much more than the devotees do about the scriptures. They can quote verses, they know so much philosophy, but they don't have faith, they don't have devotion, they don't believe in the scriptures. They study it from an academic point of view. For them the interest of the scriptures is only some intellectual gymnastics. It's something that captivates them intellectually and they like to study this. But because they don't have bhakti or faith in the scriptures, therefore that kind of knowledge is not what is being referred to here. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanamam mam prapadyate vasudevah sarvam iti sa mahatma sudurlakha. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that after many, many lifetimes of acquiring knowledge, one may eventually come to the platform of surrendering to Krishna, understanding that Vasudeva or Krishna is everything, I must surrender to him. And such a soul is very rare, and therefore he is called Mahatma or a great Krishna. So knowing Krishna means surrendering to him. Surrendering to him means developing love for him, being a pure devotee. So it is only a pure devotee who has perfect knowledge of Krishna, because that knowledge is realized knowledge. We say, for example, that Krishna is beautiful, the most attractive person. We have some realization of that because we see the deities every day and we have some faith. But one who is absorbed completely at the highest stages of devotional service actually realizes that. Jnanam vijnana sahitam yajnata mokshase ashubhat. So there is knowledge and there is realized knowledge, vijnana. And when there is vijnana, then all the miseries disappear. So ultimately the goal of life is devotional service. So what is the sequence that is being talked about? First of all, there is work. Work means some kind of sacrifice. Even the ordinary meaning of the term sacrifice means I'm sacrificing something, I've sacrificed so much for you, and yet you have done this to me. Right? We sacrifice means to give up something for something else, maybe for someone, whatever may be the motivation for giving it up. But generally the everyday meaning of the word sacrifice is that we give up something. So every form of work means giving up something. When you work, you give up your physical energy. You give up so many things. So that work, which is done, giving up something, is a sacrifice. But really, the meaning of the word sacrifice, as Prabhupada has explained here, is that it is activity meant for the pleasure of Krishna. But not everybody is on that platform. So in the previous verses, Krishna has elaborated on the concept of yajna, and he says there are several things we have to understand. In every sacrifice there is a contribution or something that is offered. Imagine that there is a fire sacrifice taking place, because that's the most common idea of a sacrifice that we have in our mind. Imagine there is a fire sacrifice, like in an initiation ceremony or in any other ceremony like that. What are the different elements of a sacrifice? There is a person who offers a sacrifice. There is something that he offers, maybe the grains, maybe some fruits and seeds and so on. There is a fire into which he offers, and then there is a result. And there is a process by which the sacrifice takes place. So Krishna is comparing these different kinds of activity or work to the physical act of pouring something into a fire. And he's talking about various categories of people. One is the brahmachari, the other is the grihastha, and then he talks about one who is interested in self-realization, and then he talks about those who accept strict vows and severe austerities. Then there are those who are the yogis, those who are the jnanis, who simply study the Vedas for knowledge. There are others who practice controlling of the breath, and so on. And he has explained here how they give up something, offer something into something else, and they achieve a result. But ultimately, Krishna is saying here that whatever be the sacrifice, it must be performed with transcendental knowledge. it must lead to transcendental knowledge. So ultimately sacrifice leads to transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge leads to the mitigation or destruction of miseries. That is liberation, liberation from misery. And that liberation eventually leads to devotional service. And devotional service has to be performed with a pure motive, eventually to give pure love for Krishna. So that is the hierarchy, the sequence in which things go. We can understand naturally, yes, here we have to sacrifice our phones also to attain transcendental knowledge. So Prabhupada is explaining the purport here, this sequence. The purpose of all sacrifice is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, second stage, and third stage, that is ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. So why are there different types of activities, different types of sacrifices? Because there are different mentalities. People have different faith. People have different mindsets. Not everybody is alike. So they will all perform their different activities according to their own mentality. What to speak of other processes? Even in the path of devotional service, there are so many different mentalities. Broadly speaking, there are five mentalities, right? These are the five mellows. Vishantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras and the Madhuryaras. And even within each ras, then there are so many different gradations and types. It is interesting, why does the Supreme Lord have so many forms? It would have been so much easier, so less confusing, if God just had one form, isn't it? So easy. And everyone is so confused now because God, is this one God, is that not God? Why does one God have so many forms? Is it many gods, is it one God? So if he were just one form, it would have been so easy. So why does God have many forms? Who would like to say? We are not talking about the demigods now. We are only talking about the forms, the bona fide forms of Krishna.
To perform different kind of activities.
Well, that's one reason, that because of his different forms, he performs different activities, yes, but that is in relationship to this world. But in the spiritual world, also, each Vaikuntha planet has different forms of the Lord. Goloka Vrindavan has a different form. Why? Yes? To reciprocate different? To reciprocate different pastimes, okay, somewhat close by, yes?
Because every living entity has different nature. Reciprocate with that nature, Lord has to take different forms.
Nature in what respect?
Lord is very personal, so to facilitate the feelings of every living entity.
Yes, we are very much almost there. The reason is that different devotees like to worship the Lord in different mentalities. Their bhav, their mood is different. So Krishna takes unlimited forms according to the unlimited moods in which he can be served and loved. So because Krishna is unlimited, he can accommodate the diverse serving moods of unlimited devotees. He does this by the simple process of expanding himself. We cannot do that. For us to reciprocate with different kinds of moods may be difficult, but Krishna is perfect. So the reason Krishna, the primary reason Krishna takes on different moods, different forms, is because there are different mentalities in serving Krishna. All are pure. All the residents of the spiritual world are 100% pure devotees of the Lord. But still, because the jiva has free will, therefore, each jiva has the freedom to serve Krishna and love him in a certain way. So independence can never be destroyed. This is one of the fallacies of the Mayavadi school. They believe that by merging into the impersonal Brahman, by liberation, actually everything can be destroyed, but it's not possible. Because a jiva is eternally conscious. A jiva is not a stone, Prabhupada explains one place. And therefore, the jiva's individuality is also something that is eternal. Natvivaham jatunasam natvam neme janadipa. Krishna says that never was there a time when Arjuna, you did not exist, nor me, nor all these kings. Krishna is referring to the spiritual status of all the living entities. So therefore, these different mentalities, moods and expressions of individuality are there. In the spiritual world, these different mentalities express themselves in the form of different kinds of service to the Lord. And in the material world, they also express themselves in terms of different kinds of activities. The more pious among them try to link up their activities with the Lord in some way or the other and perform all these sacrifices that Krishna is speaking about here. But ultimately, they are meant to attain transcendental knowledge and then love of God. In the concluding portion of the purport, Prabhupada says, depending on different differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karmakanda, fruitive activities, and sometimes jnanakanda, knowledge in pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. So karmakanda is also a kind of sacrifice. Jnanakanda is also sacrifice. Ashtanga yoga is also sacrifice. Because as Prabhupada has mentioned, it is translated the word yajna to mean Krishna. Yajnartha acharyat karma. So one must perform karma to please Krishna. Every other activity is an inferior form of sacrifice. We see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when Sutta Goswami arrives at Naimisharanya, sages had been gathered there for many years prior to that, and they had been performing some sacrifices, fire sacrifices. And then they asked Sutta Goswami many questions, and Sutta Goswami started speaking about Krishna, and they liked it very much. And they said, Karman yasmin anashrase dhuma dhumanatmana bhavan apayati govinda pad padmasavam madhu. They said, my dear Sutta Goswami, here we have been performing all these different fruitful activities, sacrifices, for many, many years. But somehow the only result of performing all these five sacrifices is dhuma, dhumaratmanam bhavan, that our faces have become black from the smoke. That's the only result we have achieved. But now, apayati govinda pada padma, then now that you are giving us this very nectarian beverage of the lotus feet of Govinda or Krishna, now we are feeling satisfied. So now we are realizing that this kind of sacrifices that we were doing earlier are not of much value. The only benefit we got, we made our faces black. Sometimes when you go in India, behind traveling on the road, and you see some truck, there are some very colorful slogans. And one of the slogans sometimes you find is that it's in Hindi, and it says, and roughly translated, it means that, oh, a one of evil eye, may your face become black. You know, so don't have an evil eye. That's so anyway, if you're traveling behind that, you have to read that. So these sages are saying that because of the smoke, our faces have become black. That's the only benefit we've achieved. But now we've understood that devotional service is the highest. So all other forms of sacrifice are inferior. And in this Kali Yuga, of course, the chanting of the holy name, Sankirtan Yajna, is a recommended process for pleasing Krishna. So even when we chant the holy names, we don't chant for anything else except pleasing Krishna. We don't chant to become happy. All the Prabhupada said, chant and be happy. But happiness is a natural consequence of chanting, but it's not necessarily the motivation for chanting. The motivation is to please Krishna. Mostly we attain happiness not when we are chanting, but when we finish our chanting. Oh, I've done with my 16 now. With relief, I'm liberated now from my chanting. I don't have to chant. So the goal of the reason for chanting is to please Krishna. So even our chanting must be done. If we may be very talented singers, our purpose of singing is not to exhibit our musical talent, neither is it to experience the happiness of some music, but it is simply to please Krishna. Similarly, every activity done in devotional service is for this purpose. Whether one is sweeping the floor, one is worshipping the deity, one is reading or studying the books, the spiritual books, whether one is chanting the holy names, whatever activity one does in Krishna consciousness is all to be done simply for pleasing Krishna. Then one attains perfection. So that is the sum and substance here, that devotional service is the only process by which one can attain real knowledge and real happiness. Karma kanda, jnana kanda, vishaya bhanda. Kaviraj Goswami, or it is Narottam Das Thakur, says that is jnana kanda and karma kanda, they are pots of poison. But what about bhakti? Bhakti is kevala ananda kanda. It is only happiness, unadulterated happiness. The Bhagavad describes it picturesquely as being a fruit, the mature fruit of all the Vedas. Nigama kalpa karor galitam phalam shukamukhad amrita dravatam yutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam ohur aho ratikabhu vibhavakaha. That this Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of all the Vedas, the tree of the Vedas. So relish it, O liberated souls. Please relish this and experience real happiness. So this fruit, the Acharyas have described, is something that doesn't have any interfering obstructions that destroy the fun of eating a fruit. One of the tastiest fruits, perhaps the king of all fruits, the heavenly fruit is a mango. Prabhupada says it's a heavenly fruit. So when you have a mango with you, you want to enjoy it. Now there's some obstruction, isn't it? What are the obstructions? First of all, there's the skin. It's a big botheration, you have to peel it off. There are some I know who eat the skin also. They're so eager to eat the mango, they kind of wait till they peel off. But then you come to the seal, and certainly you can't eat that. So it's a botheration. So the skin and the seed are like jnana kanda, karma kanda, like that. And what's in between? It's a nectar. That's a real mango. So pure devotional service is like a mango inside out. No skin, no seed, pure mango. Ripe, tasty, delicious mango. So it's a nectar, as the sages of Naimisharanya have explained. Pad Padma Savam Madhu. Madhu means sweet. Asava. Asava is a kind of beverage. It's like a tonic. It's good for health, very rejuvenating. So similarly, the soul becomes rejuvenated by performing devotional service and experiences greatest happiness. That is the ultimate sacrifice. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
And how is this ananda in Brahman? I couldn't understand. You're saying it in Brahman also, ananda,
mm-hmm.
Emerging in that.
The ananda, the so-called ananda of Brahmananda, of merging into the impersonal Brahman, is mostly just the complete relief from all material distress. Because the impersonal Brahman has no tinge of the three modes of material nature. So therefore, one experiences complete relief. That is actually Brahmananda. It's not much of a positive bliss. It's mostly at a neutral stage. And devotional service is positive, ever increasing, unlimitedly. Yes, yeah. Any question?
You talk about the different forms of Krishna, and well, they also have different names. So I have two questions. How many forms are there? And are the forms, the form and the name, one-to-one related?
The question is that how many forms of Krishna are there, and how many names, and are the forms and names one-to-one related? Krishna is unlimited, so his forms are unlimited. And his names are also unlimited. And it is not necessary that there is a one-to-one correlation. Every form of Krishna can have unlimited names. When I was a student in school, there was a story I had read about, which is called the 99 billion names of God. It was a science fiction story. And it was about some Buddhist monks up in the Himalayas in Tibet. And they had some, supposedly, this is just a story, what the author was saying, and they had a whole body of wisdom that they were counting the names of God. And they hadn't reached anywhere near 99 billion. And they were counting, but they were getting into probably a few hundred thousand or something. And their philosophy was that once their name is reached 99th billion, 99 billionth name of the Lord be, the whole universe will collapse. And then this thing, it was supposed to be their dharma that they were supposed to calculate. So then they had a huge supercomputer and they tried to work out. So you see, people have this thing, even the science fiction writers, they have something. It's all there. Krishna consciousness is there in them. It's just a little maya covering them, that's all. They don't have the right guidance. And we'll read about that tomorrow. How to get that transcendental knowledge, the very important word. Right? They're coming up tomorrow. So God doesn't have 99 billion names. He has unlimited number of billion names. 99 billion is to limit God. It may seem like a very large number for us, but for Krishna it's not large at all.
Two questions. Like what Krishna says in the Gita and Bhagavatam, that is what we have to do to please him. But in practicality, on every step, how to know what should I do, how should I act or think or say things which will please Krishna, which will be pleasing to Krishna. There is one question and another question was...
Okay, let's deal with it one at a time. First question is that yes, if we follow what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, then we can please him. But in day-to-day life, how does one know how to act? And in a particular situation, how to act in a way that pleases Krishna? Of course, the basic simple answer is Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. First of all, we have to become acquainted with what devotion service is by hearing from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. These are the three sources of bona fide information for us. Having heard that, we have to use our spiritual intelligence. And Krishna, as the Adi Guru from within the heart, gives us the direction. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogartam yenamam upayantite. For those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them, I seated in the hearts of all living beings, give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So even how to deal with everyday situations, Krishna will help. Provided we also try to understand Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and then if it's a question of understanding in a particular context how to do something, sometimes it may not be easy. Practical application of spiritual principles in this material world can sometimes be complex. But if you try to stick as far as possible to Guru Sadhu Shastra and depend on Krishna with a pure heart, he will give us the intelligence. For example, Srila Prabhupada said that this GBC body will be the ultimate managing authority. So they have so many dilemmas that, and decisions to be made that come to them every day, every year. So they have to use their collective intelligence. Try to see Guru Sadhu Shastra and look within their hearts as to what will please Krishna, what will please Prabhupada now. And with their best collective intelligence, based on sincere desire to please Krishna, something comes up. Yes, Mataji, question.
No, it's not a question, it's a comment. Prabhupada once said to my dad, Sister Govinda Dasi, of course it wasn't a really philosophical point, but Prabhupada said that in these matters you should try to use your intelligence. And if you don't have any, then find somebody with some.
Yes, that's Shastra. Sadhu means saintly persons, specifically it refers to saintly persons in the pre-parampara, previous, but it also refers to the association of devotees. Therefore we talk about collective intelligence. So the association of devotees is very valuable. Sometimes in the association of devotees, when there is churning, when something comes up, some nectar comes up. But we have to be careful that the poison doesn't come out. Sometimes there's so much heat in discussion about this and that. It's the halal poison coming out. Yes.
What should we do when we commit mistake? In the application, because we don't get to discuss or do things, but on the spot we have to do something or something. And we happen to commit mistakes. What?
Well, we all commit mistakes. To err is human, and it's one of the four defects of the conditioned soul. So it's natural that everyone is going to commit mistakes in life. So the best we can do is to not repeat it, and to learn from it, and learn that Krishna has some lesson to teach us with every mistake we make. And that's called experience. What is the meaning of experience? Experience means what you've learned from your mistakes. He's an experienced person. Experience doesn't mean he hasn't done any mistakes, but experienced person means that he has learned from his mistakes. Therefore, he's wise. A wise person is not defined as one who hasn't done any mistakes. A wise person is one who has learned from mistakes. A foolish person is one who has not learned from mistakes. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Tomorrow onwards is the important verse, Tadvati Pradipatena Pariprasnena Kevaya.
I believe that we go on from the gate, right?
Oh, it's for a week.